So we're spending 3 weeks on the three readings that were all last week's readings in the lectionary. I put a picture up of this week's slide for the sermon, and Greg wrote, "Hey, are you a week behind?" It's like, no, there was just three really good readings in 1 week. So we'll soon be 3 weeks behind. But last week we spent a lot of time examining the gospel reading, or the reading from the book of Acts about the Ethiopian eunuch. Next week we're going to be spending some deep time in the other reading we read last week from 1 John, and we're going to hear some highlights from it right now to remind us about God is love.
Beloved, let us love one another, because love comes from God. Everyone who loves is a child of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. No one has ever seen God. If we love one another, God lives in us, and God's love is perfected in us. God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them.
Thank you so much. And here is the reading we read last week, and from the gospel. We'll read again today. Jesus said, "I am the true vine, and Abba is the vine grower. God removes every branch in me that bears no fruit. Every branch that bears fruit is trimmed clean so that it might bear more fruit. You have already been cleansed by the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me as I abide in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, and you are the branches. Those who abide in me and I in them bear much fruit, because apart from me you can do nothing." That is such a great old-fashioned word, abide. It doesn't get used much nowadays. It's considered so old-fashioned a word that a lot of translations, like the New International Version, which I think is the one that your pew Bible is, uses the word remain. Remain in me as I remain in you. Which I'm not sure if I like remain. I think of remains, which is but also it seems static. When you remain, you're like, you're there. You're not moving. But abide is such an old-fashioned word that just doesn't get used very often. The only use in popular culture that I could think of this week was the Coen Brothers film, The Dude, or that's called The Big Lebowski, but everyone calls it The Dude Abides movie. Anyone not see The Big Lebowski? Anyone seen The Big Lebowski? Ah, all right, a few. This was a cult film that was released, are you ready to feel old? 20 years ago. Last month, 20 years ago, The Big Lebowski came out. It's a pretty cool film. Jeff Bridges plays the dude, who is a full-time slacker and stoner, who just kind of mellows his way through a wild ride, a very much Coen Brothers ride of mistaken identity and kidnappings and car wrecks and bowling. The dude abides is a key phrase in the movie. And here's a clip from the last minute of the film or so. Bob, can you play that?
Hey, man.
How do you do, dude?
I wonder if I see you again.
I wouldn't miss the semis. How things been going?
You know, strikes and gutters, ups and downs.
Sure, I got you.
Yeah. Thanks, Gary. Well, take care, man. Gotta get back.
Sure. Take it easy, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I know that you will.
Yeah, well, the dude abides.
The dude abides. I don't know about you, but I take comfort in that. It's good knowing he's out there, the dude, taking her easy for all us sinners.
The dude abides. I don't know about you, but I take comfort in that. It's good knowing he's out there, the dude, taking her easy for all us sinners. Taking her easy for all us sinners. So, if you go online to look up what that means, the dude abides online, you will find hundreds of blogs where people are arguing about what exactly that means. It's like a theological discussion, only it's about, you know, the Coen brothers' film. Abide has, or gets used with two very different meanings. So most common way it gets used is in the term abiding, like a law-abiding citizen, or someone who abides by the rules. That usually means somebody else's rules that one abides by. So to abide means to live on the straight and narrow. It is a demarcated life, a defined life. It is bordered. It is fenced in. It can be a narrow way to live, abiding that way. But abide can also mean something radically different, related to abode. They have the same root. What's your abode? It's home. It's home. So abide is to find or be in your home space, to reside, to just be in a place where you belong. As the dude would say, to hang out, man, to chill. For the dude, when he says, with his two Miller Lights, the dude abides, it means to chill in all his coolness, in all his existential dudosity. And anytime someone expects him to abide by their rules or expectations, well, like, that's just not cool, man. The dude abides by his own rules. Now, there are a lot of folks who find the dude's philosophy of abiding to be a pretty good rule of life. And there is actually a church of the dude online. I mean, it's semi-tongue-in-cheek. You can find a church. You can become a Jedi. There's a church of the Jedi. There's a church. One of my favorite churches is the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. They do very cool stuff. I don't think the Church of the Dude is doing anything because they're just abiding. The rule of life for the dude is to just be cool, to drink White Russians, to find a rug that really ties the room together, and to realize that life is like, you know, gives you strikes and gutter balls, man. Just, you know, deal with it. So that's great. I don't know how many of us really want to be part of the Church of the Dude. But what do we folk who are learning how to follow Jesus, what do we do with this funny word, abide, that Jesus uses? Now, a lot of Christians, and the tradition I grew up in, sees the Christian life of abiding as abiding by the rules. The faith community that you belong to has a set of thou shalt nots that are agreed upon, at least in public, that allow the community to judge how good a Christian you are being by how well you abide by those external rules. So if you dress wrong, or you have a beer, or you kiss on your first date. Or there's a lot of teenage rules. We had a lot of teenage abiding rules. I don't know about the grown-ups. They didn't seem to have as many. But we had to abide by, or else you were not part. But Jesus in John's gospel never says abide by the rules. He says abide in me. Are you ready for a real quick Bible study? Put on scholastic hats. Okay. John's gospel. Those of you who just took the world's quickest run through the Bible in our early morning Bible study last season, you know that John's gospel was the last one written of the four gospels in the New Testament. It was written, most scholars think, around the year 95 or so, which is a full generation after the Gospel of Mark was written, and a decade or so after Matthew and Luke were written. And it's a very different gospel. Mark, Matthew, and Luke follow the same basic structure. They're called synoptic because you can lay Matthew, Mark, and Luke out linearly, and you can see all these parallels all the way through. You can line them up and see a very similar basic structure, biography, sayings. There's differences. They each bring in their own sources and that stuff. That's great. But they follow the same basic structure. And John's gospel is like way over here in left field. It is just different. The structure is different. Places where Jesus goes, the way Jesus talks are all very different. Jesus in the Synoptic Gospels teaches in what literary form? All you English majors can now yell it out. Jesus teaches in parables, exactly. There are more than 40 of them in the Synoptic Gospels. You got the Good Samaritan parable, you got the prodigal son, you got the wise and foolish maidens, you got the four different soils, you got the lost sheep, you got the foolish maidens. We could probably get all 40 of them if we sat around and collected our collective memory here. The Gospel of John contains not a single parable. I mean, that's really different. The way Jesus teaches in the Synoptics is completely absent in John. John doesn't teach in parables. Jesus teaches in profound, philosophical, multi-layered metaphors that always have to be in all caps. The bread of life, living water, the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. And in today's reading, I am the vine. They're big. Parables operate like a joke. They're simple stories and they hit you. You either get it or you don't. And I've said this a million times, but I always have to bring it up. My New Testament professor said, if a parable doesn't hit you, either pissing you off or making you laugh, then you missed the point of the parable. In John, these metaphors are deep, multi-layered, complex, and you can spend the rest of your life diving into just one of them. Today's reading, I am the vine, is a profound metaphor for the people of Israel in the first century when Jesus was walking around doing his thing. It's a pregnant metaphor for Israel. In fact, Israel's metaphor for itself was the vine. It saw God as the owner of the land. Israel was a vineyard. And that God expected Israel to produce fruit of justice, of mercy, of compassion, of a kingdom of God on earth where God's will was being done. That was their calling, to be the vineyard. In Isaiah chapter 5, for the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is the vineyard of Israel. They were one and the same. Now again, what is the point of a vineyard? Sorry? To make grapes. bear fruit. That's the only reason you have a vineyard. There's no other point. Otherwise, you're just wasting a lot of land to produce fruit. Now, what did that mean for the original hearers of John's gospel? For the hearers of John's gospel, bearing fruit meant following in the way of Jesus. It meant following Jesus, his life, his way, his truth, the way of the one who so clearly showed God's life and truth and way to those first century followers of his, and I would argue for us 21st century followers. When Jesus says, "I am the vine," our calling as branches is to bear fruit, and that means living in the way of Jesus. Jesus over and over says we can't do that on our own. We are like lost sheep without a shepherd. We are harassed and helpless. We can't do it on our own. We don't have the strength on our own. We don't have the depth, the resilience to follow the difficult road and way of Jesus in the world by ourselves. John's gospel says that we need a source bigger than ourselves for us to be able to find the spiritual strength, the discipline, the resilience to be able to follow. And that's why in John's gospel you get all these deep metaphors. They have some commonality. Bread of life, living water. What do those have in common? They're food. They're sustenance. The good shepherd is a person of safety, and the one who brings the sheep to places of food and rest and water. All the things you need for life, those are what those big metaphors that Jesus uses in the Gospel of John. Bread of life, living water, good shepherd. Jesus can be that source, that energy, that life energy. Not life as merely sucking up oxygen and metabolizing it, but, and okay, maybe I'm being too pejorative for the dude, but you know, being chill, man, may not be the most meaningful life ever. Jesus says, "I come to offer life to the full, life abundant, life overflowing, life eternal." So connecting to that source is what Jesus is talking about when he says abide. Connecting to that source, the Greek verb, as long as we're doing Bible study stuff here, the Greek verb is menein, from the infinitive is meno, and it means to abide, to remain with, to dwell. Abiding in Jesus, connecting to our source, to our sustenance, to our model of how to live in mercy, in compassion, in obedience, in love. Did I mention love? There's a lot of love in there. Abiding in Jesus is the way that we as individuals and as a community connect to the source that allows us to produce fruit. And without abiding in him, we produce nothing, we're told in John's gospel. John Petty, I think he's an Anglican pastor. He has a blog where he wrote, "That in us which does not produce fruit will die." If something in us does not fulfill its intended purpose, it will wither and dry up. The vine represents the individual's connection with the true center, which is Christ. And then he writes this: aligned in heart and will with Jesus, his followers not only will be new people, but will also have ongoing strength for the journey and the way of discipleship. Discipleship, the following Jesus way, is not static. That's why I don't like the word that is used in the New International Version, remain. Discipleship is dynamic, it's growing, it's moving, it's changing, it's dynamic. When Jesus says, "Abide in me," the fruit is to follow in his way. And that is the way of discipleship. Alcoholics Anonymous calls it the third step, surrendering to a higher power. Buddhism speaks of finding refuge in the Dharma. John's Gospel calls it abiding in the pure, unconditional love and grace that Jesus embodied with his life, his teachings, and his body itself, which he says is our food. It is our bread. It is our cup. It is our source. It is our food. I know nothing about growing grapes. And when I think of grapes, I think of the wild grapes that grow around here, which aren't there at all. Then they come out of the ground and they wrap around stuff, and you have to go out and trim them up, and they make these nasty little, not nasty, but very sour little unpalatable grapes. So last month, when Barb and I were riding through southern France on our bikes, I was. It'll be so cool to see real vineyards, and I was expecting to see lots of tenderly stuff. Oh, you know, obviously dead from the previous season because it was early spring. Nothing was happening yet. But instead, we found. Bob, can you go to the next slide? We found this stuff. It looked like just dead sticks in the ground. Ancient, dead-looking stalks, oddly cruciform in shape. Acres and acres of it. I wasn't expecting grapes, but I was expecting, yeah, tendrils and stuff. Bob, can you go to the next one there? I mean, this is not much of a metaphor for me. This just looks like death on a stick. It just, as far as you could see. All right, stop there for a sec. But these dark brown, barren-looking things are the vines. I think of vines as being the stringy part, but these are the vines. With decades-old deep roots that go way down in this really rough soil. That's the other thing I was surprised at. I was expecting, you know, nice rich soil to make good rich grapes. And they say that rich soil makes lazy grapes. It's soil like this. This was rocky limestone, hardly an organic molecule in there. They have to have deep, deep roots to gain sustenance. And the vine provides all of it for these grapes, and they're tough. And the grapes that have to work hard, they make the best wine. Multi-layered, complex, able to age. It makes for good stuff. So we had a friend, Allison, who we were supposed to meet while we were bicycling, but she got out there a week or so later than us. We didn't end up meeting, but she just yesterday sent this picture. Oh! Yeah, a week and a half later. This is what those fields look like. They are green, they are alive, and in another few weeks, there will be little blossoms, and another few weeks after that, there will be little green grapes, and then there will be purple grapes, and then they will be picked, and then they will be bearing the fruit that they're called to do. The only purpose for these fields is not for tourists to take pictures, it's to bear fruit, and that will eventually get turned into a snappy little Lafitte Rothschild or something like that. There's a language I'm never going to get. It's a wine snob language, so I'm not going to get it. But yeah, green, succulent, sweet, full of life. But these branches that you see, all the beautiful green, they can do nothing without being attached to those dark brown wooden rootstocks, the vine. But abiding in them, they will produce fruit. They will create wine that puts France on the map. You can spend forever diving deep into this Johannine metaphor of the vine. But for us today, here's the point, because it's as deep as I'm able to go this week. Christian discipleship is not about abiding by the rules. It's about abiding in Jesus. It is knowing deep down to the marrow of your bones that love is the Lord of heaven and earth. It's finding your strength, your source, your life, your meaning, your meaning for what it means to be truly human from the one who was most fully human, who was most fully the revelation of God's will for humanity, this wandering sage, this traveling rabbi, this son of man, this son of God, this vine, this Jesus who promises to abide in you as we abide in him. And we can bear fruit. Amen.